Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, it's Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, November 20th, 2020. Front page. Myers. Businesses may drop to 50% occupancy. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE, at MRT.com. As coronavirus hospitalizations continue to trend upward, businesses in Midland may soon be required by the state to lower their occupancies to 50%, Midland Memorial Hospital President and CEO Russell Myers said Thursday. An executive order from Governor Greg Abbott mandates that if COVID-19 hospitalizations make up more than 15% of a trauma service area's total hospital capacity, businesses in that region must scale back their occupancies. The order takes effect after COVID-19 hospitalizations stay above that 15% threshold for 7 consecutive days. While coronavirus hospitalizations in Midland have been hovering at 30 to 40% of total capacity for several days, smaller hospitals in the Midland-Odessa TSA have kept numbers for the region below 15%. That changed this week, though, when the percentage rose to 16.1% on Tuesday and 16.7% on Wednesday. "We are on that path now for the first time," Myers said during a press conference Thursday. "And if we maintain this status through Monday, we'll be facing that reduction in business capacities." Although the Midland-Odessa TSA has had lower hospitalization numbers than areas such as Lubbock and Amarillo, the numbers for the region as a whole offer a false picture of the virus impact on hospitalizations in Midland. "The reason we've lagged is not because we don't have a crisis here. We do. We just have a larger number of small rural hospitals in our huge region that really can't take care of any COVID patients. So it's Midland and Odessa where all the patients have to come." About a quarter of coronavirus patients at MMH are from outside Midland County, according to Myers. He said the hospital largely has stopped accepting transfers from other hospitals because there's no space. Myers said MMH has requested an overflow tent from the state, which likely would be used to treat patients coming to the emergency room to open additional beds inside the hospital. When asked what would lower coronavirus hospitalizations immediately, he said there was virtually nothing that could be done because cases can take up to 2 weeks after exposure to develop. He said hospital staff already have created a contingency plan to transfer patients to hospitals in other regions if needed. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, who also participated in Thursday's press conference, said businesses that don't lower their occupancy if the state mandates them will be in violation of Abbott's order. "Hopefully we won't get to that place where we have to roll things back, but I know if we do, I fully expect that all our businesses that understand the seriousness of the situation will roll back to 50%. We'll have to deal with egregious violations or those who continue to just snub their noses at what is happening." A commentary by Stuart Noreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. Reporter Telegram to transition to 5 days a week. There is no better source for local news, oil industry coverage, and sports reporting than the Midland Reporter Telegram. That will always be the case. We remind you of this because now more than ever, Midlanders need the most accurate, complete, and reliable reports on what is taking place in their city, and the Reporter Telegram is the only news source based in Midland. The Reporter Telegram has been in existence since 1929 when T. Paul Barron brought together the Reporter and Telegram newspapers. The Reporter Telegram will transition in December from being a daily newspaper. The decision has been made to consolidate the publishing of 5 editions, Tuesday through Friday, and a weekend edition on Saturday. What does this mean for you? From an editorial perspective, you will continue to receive all the coverage and information you have come to rely on. Our news, oil, feature, and sports sections will be there. The number of locally produced stories will not change. The effort that we put into the print product and what you see online will be what you have come to expect. But let me, someone whose family has been in Midland since the 1930s, remind you that the Reporter-Telegram will continue to be your newspaper. That won't change. Since Mr. Barron's first edition, the Reporter-Telegram has lived up to his words that editorially this newspaper will stand for progress at times. It will sponsor any worthy cause in Midland and its territory and will come out in the open and champion development of resources in this section of West Texas. It will attempt to keep pace with Midland's growth and will go beyond that and attempt to be a leader for bigger and better things. Also, the Reporter-Telegram will give close cooperation with churches, civic organizations, schools, and institutions of the community, assisting each one impartially. Such organizations are invited to make use of the report of the columns of the Reporter-Telegram. Barron's words ring as true today as they did in the first edition. If you don't believe me, give me a call at 352-0605. Let's talk about how we can partner to bring better information to more people. We welcome your contributions to make the Reporter-Telegram and MRT.com a more local product, because without you, there is no Reporter-Telegram. Any newspaper in America is only as good as the investment that its community makes in it. Change is inevitable, and the newspaper industry has changed drastically in the past decade. We believe taking this step will make our operations more efficient for both our readers and those who contribute local content. We also plan to continue to engage you, our customers, with a website that rewards subscribers with full access to our best coverage and complements the print product and e-edition. No matter your avenue to the latest news, features, and sports, we will remain the most trusted source of information for Midland and Midland County. To our current subscribers, thank you, and we hope you'll stick with us. Your support is important now more than ever as we start a journey down this new path. To potential subscribers, come and see why we are the pulse of news and information for Midland and the surrounding area. We believe community newspapers are the first draft of local history, provide a mirror for all things that make us special, and operate best in partnership with the community. A commentary by Terry Williamson, former sports editor. Cloud will hang over final MHS Lee game. Editor's note. Editor Stuart Doreen asked legendary West Texas sports writer Terry Williamson to offer his thoughts on the final football game between Midland High and Lee. By my own reckoning, I have been to 39 of the last 47 Midland High versus Midland Lee football rivalry games. Tonight's contest will be number 40 for me, and the last. That storied history comes to a crashing halt with a final gun of tonight's meeting, so I go to this final contest with great trepidation, disappointment, and foreboding for the future of all our former athletic warriors. I covered somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 of the MHS Lee meetings, and I consider it an honor and a privilege to have played a small role in documenting this series for our community. It still pleases me when former students and players from both schools approach me and thank me for covering their team back in the day. These people are now adults with their own families, but they remember the glory days of playing for team and for school. They still carry with them pride and confidence. They hold dearly to their accomplishments. If you are one who followed my writings over the years, you will know that I took great care in trying to cement history and traditions that came with this iconic West Texas district. I tried my best to make the games for all schools bigger than life, and I was fortunate enough to be here during the glory days of the West Texas football era. Those days were so much fun, filled with so much passion, and ultimately becoming a solid fabric of the community lifestyle. I've heard it said before that I was all hype and of little substance, but I refuse to apologize for my passion for the game or my love of community. If nothing else, I was all in for our kids on both sides of town. But by renaming Lee, we are somehow trying to erase history, leaving the impression that all who played under its banner are somehow tainted or dishonorable. I even heard the term deplorable being used. Lee will ultimately lose its identity over this. It happens everywhere it's been tried. Mostly it is a matter of convenience in dropping the former identity because it's just too hard to explain why there was a name change in the first place. Lee might as well become a new school next year. It won't be long until the old is lost and will have no bearing on what remains. The traditions and the passion will all be lost for a replacement still to be determined. Hopefully, this new replacement will write a great history for itself, but the Lee you and I know will be no more. When I used to travel across this beautiful country and world, I always ran into someone who knew about Midland Lee football. It always amazed me, but that identity will now be lost forever. And what is worse, we accomplished this move at the cost of great community division. The poorest of local leadership was displayed during this move of transition when the community was totally left out of the decision-making. That mistake will surely have long-term ramifications. When the wife and I heard of renaming possibilities, we were more concerned with the fact that this was being brought up during the time for school reopening in August, and we thought the school board should be focusing on that. Well, Board President Rick Davis did respond to my wife's inquiry, and we found out just about everything we need to know about the renaming issue. Davis assured my wife that the board was taking care of business, saying, as an example, at the board meeting, we spent about 3 hours on academic and mental health issues and about 30 minutes on the renaming issue. How could the board make such a monumental decision in 30 minutes without finding out how other schools were affected by such moves, how the lives of former grads were going to be impacted, how much it would cost, and having no public input at all? This should have taken weeks, if not months. I would like to publicly commend Board Member Brian Murray for casting the lone no vote in this incredibly hurried process. The problem was then compacted when the board formed a committee to ascertain what names the public preferred. That was nice of them, but they ended up throwing the committee under the bus and not choosing any of the names they offered. I feel so sorry for those committee members who had to listen to the gripes and complaints from angry Lee partisans. The board's eyes were opened somewhat when they learned the signage, uniforms, logos, campus renovations to eliminate all Lee and Rebel references would cost more than $3 million. Only then did the board cut the cost by somewhat retaining the Rebel nickname and the gray and maroon colors. Still, the taxpayer will have to pick up the bill of renaming the school, since the board never really had a plan to pay for it from their lengthy 30-minute meeting on the subject. Let's be clear here. MHS supporters cannot afford to be ambivalent on this subject, even though the name change does not directly concern your school. You will have to help pay for the naming costs, and these costs could soar well beyond $1 million. It's basically an unfair tax placed on MHS taxpayers. This should not impact MHS voters, but it will, maybe for years and years to come. What I'm hearing on the street is that many voters in this community will never again vote for another MISD board proposal. This is a disturbing reality when you consider the fact that Midland has already has a checkered history as far as bond issues are concerned, even in the best of times. However, I don't think that subject was ever brought up in the 30-minute decision that impacts students at both MHS and Lee. It impacts the community in an era when we need to get our grades up and improve our ability to provide the education our kids deserve. Now that the public has been cut off from participation in this issue, the school board may increasingly find itself behind the proverbial eight ball more and more. We should have had this conversation in an open and public manner that has not been afforded here. It was a decision by six people, and yes, they were elected officials. It must be noted they do have the power and authority to do what they did, but it doesn't necessarily make the path they took reasonable or thoughtworthy. It is under this cloud that tonight's final football game between MHS and Lee will be played. But I am confident that our kids from both schools will rise above it all and play with honor and dignity. That is one area where I never had to write a word of admonishment. I still love the kids, and my memory of them and support of them remains unshaken. Go Lee. Go MHS. local and state news. Johnson, county will create pandemic policy to address rising COVID cases. By Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. As hospitalizations continue to rise, the Midland County Commissioner's Court will discuss on Monday policies that could help curtail the spread of COVID-19, County Judge Terry Johnson said Thursday. Rather than a mask mandate with fines for individuals or businesses, these policies could include a reward for businesses that choose to follow coronavirus protocols and ask customers to wear masks, he said during a press conference. These are things I'd like to look at, Johnson said. I'd rather reward people for good behavior and go about it that way. Johnson said that reward for businesses could be as much as $500 and could come from funding the county received through Federal CARES Act. He said he thinks it would be more effective than a penalty because it could offset costs businesses incurred by putting safety protocols in place. Similar to concerns city leaders have raised about a mask mandate, Johnson said he feels requiring masks in any capacity would be unenforceable for law enforcement entities. I'd rather look at what we can do to reward those who do the right thing. One of the rewards is maybe we'll be a safer society here in Midland, but if it takes monetary rewards to help offset the cost, because doing these things does cost money, if we as a government can, that's the position I'd like to take. Governor Greg Abbott signed an order in July that required individuals to wear masks or face a $250 fine. Midland has not enforced that order. Johnson said he believes doing so would create a Gestapo mentality in Midland, a reference to the secret police in Nazi Germany. However, he said the commissioner's court on Monday will address how to handle the possibility of businesses opening beyond the allowed capacity should the state order them to reduce occupancy. Midland is on track to be ordered by the state to reduce business occupancies to 50% because COVID-19 hospitalizations in the Midland-Odessa Trauma Service area are above 15% of the total hospital capacity in the region. If there's an egregious infraction, we will certainly address that as it happens. The Midland City Council on Tuesday considered an ordinance that would have mandated businesses to require customers to wear masks or face a $500 fine. That ordinance was rejected in a 6-1 vote, but several council members said they would bring other ordinances related to masks before the council next week. Both the Commissioner's Court and City Council will be meeting on Monday. City. New reporting system shows 2,284 cases in 13 days. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. The Midland Health Department is again changing the way it is reporting the number of COVID-19 cases inside Midland County. The Health Department reported Thursday it will provide unconfirmed data so the community has a more current information. On Thursday, the county reported a total of 2,284 preliminary COVID cases inside Midland County from November 6 through the 18th. Those cases included 210 on Wednesday alone and 730 between Monday through Wednesday. The Midland Health Department also reported that the official total number of cases from October 25th to 31 was 762. The case number in November has been preliminary. They include 976 from November 1 to 7, 1,212 from November 8 to 14, and 798 this week from November 15 to 18. The Health Department in its Thursday report said this count is reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations. The patients have been notified by the testing location of the results. However, the patients have not been contacted by the Midland Health Department yet to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or to advise them on guidelines. The information is being released to the public in an effort to provide citizens more insight into how the virus is affecting our community on a daily basis. For the past few weeks, the Health Department has changed its way of providing information by releasing information after contact had been made with those testing positive. One reason was to make sure those testing positive were from Midland County. During that time, 7 days of the results were released. The October The health department, though, had fallen 12 days behind in providing information to the community about the number of positive tests. The overall case count through November 5th was 6,726. The city also reported there were 2,001 active cases and 4,321 people have recovered. Whitney Craig of the health department said during the United Command Team press conference Thursday that those results are still pending investigation and should be seen as raw data. She said it is part of the balance of being transparent while prioritizing toward the greater good of life community and still working on investigations needed to make sure information is accurate for their records. She said a person testing at different places is one example of how the raw data can create discrepancies.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, November 20, 2020. Silver Partner Plaque. Midland Crime Stoppers Board of Directors presented Mark Timmons, Vice President of Operations with Parsley Energy, with a Silver Partner Appreciation Plaque for the company's $2,500 donation to the nonprofit. Santa Claus is coming to Mall. Santa is coming to Midland Park Mall until November 27, and will remain there until Christmas Eve. Because of the pandemic, children will not be sitting on Santa's lap, but they will be able to talk with him, according to a press release from Cherry Hill Programs, which is providing Santa and his helpers at the mall. Santa and his helpers will be wearing masks. Guests 2 and older will be required to wear masks too. Social distancing also is required, and physical barriers will be put in place when 6 feet of distancing isn't possible. Reservations are strongly encouraged in order to reduce wait times, encourage social distancing, and promote contactless payments. Reservations can be made online at www.whereisanta.com. Walk-up visits will be allowed as space allows throughout the day. West Campus Testing Site extends hours. Midland Health has received funding from the city that will allow extended hours for COVID-19 testing at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus. The testing site will operate 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays. Anyone who has been exposed or is symptomatic can call 68 Nurse 686-8773. To make an appointment at the drive-through testing site. The test is free for those who are scheduled. Insurance information will be collected from those who are insured, according to the release. Jumbarito hosts WTFB fundraiser. The West Texas Food Bank is partnering with Jumbarito for the Give Yourself. The restaurant chain has pledged to donate 50 cents for each Jumbarito Revolutionary Rewards card visit through December 17, which will provide 2 meals to a person in need, according to a press release from WTFB. During this time, each customer who presents their rewards card will be entered into a drawing for 1,000 reward points. Jumbarito is operating through call-in orders picked up curbside and drive-through. This is the 11th year Jumbarito and the West Texas Food Bank have partnered during the holidays. Last year's promotion raised $11,403 and provided 45,612 meals, according to the release. Senior Life has fundraisers. Senior Life Midland is partnering with McAllister's Deli for Warm Up the Community. McAllister's will donate to Meals on Wheels 10 cents for every cup or bowl of soup purchased in November. For more information, call 689-6693. Senior Life is seeking donated items for the warming tree. Gifts for Midland's homebound seniors. Gifts can include blankets, socks, slippers, gift cards, and hygiene products. Items may be dropped off at 3301 Sinclair Avenue through December 11. For more information, call 689-6693 or email Kathleen Kerwan Haney. KKHAYNIE at seniorlifemidland.org or Tracy Renton, TRENTON at seniorlifemidland.org. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. through 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613. Today in Midland history, November 20, 2000. Midland's Judy Rankin was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in the World Golf Village in St. Augustine, Florida. Today in history. Today is Friday, November 20, the 325th day of 2020. There are 41 days left in the year. On this date, in 1962, President John F. Kennedy held a news conference in which he announced the end of the naval quarantine of Cuba imposed during the missile crisis, and the signing of an executive order prohibiting discrimination in federal housing facilities.
The opinion page. Opinion extra. Book about rapid onset gender dysphoria creates firestorm. This week, Abigail Schreier, author of the new book Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters, found herself at the center of a firestorm. Her great crime? Writing an assessment of a psychological phenomenon known as rapid-onset gender dysphoria, where groups of psychologically vulnerable young girls begin to self-diagnose as transgender after one member of a peer group does so. The book is sober and even-handed. Nonetheless, all hell broke loose after one person on Twitter, tweeted at Target, prompting the retailer to pledge not to make Schreier's book available, a decision it later reversed. This wasn't Schreier's first turn in the barrel. When the book first came out some months back, Amazon quickly moved to prevent her from advertising it, although books openly stumping for hormone treatment for minors suffering from gender dysphoria have met no such ban. This time, however, the publicity began to rage out of control. A transgender Berkeley professor called for burning the book, arguing, "All you're doing is removing a commodity from circulation, much as one might destroy a contaminated crop." Chase Strangio, deputy director for transgender justice at the American Civil Liberties Union, decided to abandon any pretense about defending civil liberties, tweeting, "Stopping circulation of this book and these ideas is 100% a hill I will die on." Meanwhile, the email service MailChimp, which handles mass emails on behalf of organizations, and announced it would no longer work with the Northern Virginia Tea Party, stating that it was promoting potential misinformation by holding a rally calling for a vote recount. Similarly, Facebook has reportedly been suppressing all information related to the possibility of voter fraud. So has Twitter. Such niceties aren't reserved for the political right. Matthew Iglesias, co-founder of Vox, left his own publication this week for Substack after explaining that there was a damaging trend in the media toward treating disagreement as a source of harm or personal safety. That trend, Iglesias stated, made it very challenging to do good work. Those who refuse to abide by prevailing leftist norms often find alternative outlets, but such avenues of escape are then attacked as well. This week, the Columbia Journalism Review ran a piece targeting Substack for the great sin of hosting material that might be deemed unworthy among leftist thinkers. It questioned whether Substack would replicate the patterns of marginalization found across the media industry, condemning the company's founders for their view that many viewpoints ought to be given access to the system. And CNN found time to attack Parler, a conservative answer to Twitter, with Brian Stelter lamenting that people are going more and more into their own echo chambers, which is somewhat ironic since given the enormous echo chamber CNN represents. The goal here isn't a freer discussion. It's precisely the reverse, Conservatives have known this for a long time, which is why they've had to operate using unconventional media such as talk radio and podcasting and startup websites. But the future of the country rests largely on a simple question. Will traditional liberals go along with the left, which seeks to silence in order to achieve their favored policy prescriptions? Or will they walk away from the left and choose instead to engage in open conversation with conservatives, preserving freedom of thought and discussion, but risking the possibility that their favorite policies will become more difficult to achieve? That question remains unanswered for now, but time to answer it is running out. If we hope to have a country together moving forward, we'd better have an open conversation now. Ben Shapiro, Creator Syndicate. Obituaries. Donna Jean Marshall Pollard, resident of Midland, peacefully passed away at the age of 83 on November 14th. Services will be at Forest Park Cemetery in Houston at a date to be determined. In lieu of flowers, you may make a donation to Midland Memorial Hospital Foundation, Hospice of Midland, or the Midland Humane Coalition.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, November 20th, 2020. Section A. Officials say celebrate holiday safely, by Laura Dennis. With Thanksgiving looming, health officials here Thursday pleaded with Odessans to be vigilant and safe during the holiday to help halt the spread of COVID-19 in the community. Medical Center Hospital's Dr. Timothy Benton, during a Zoom press conference, said Ector County is on pace to have about 800 new positives this week. It continues to be a forest fire, he said. The hospital is very busy. He said Thursday marked day 3 of an over 15% of bed capacity for COVID patients, and that in a few more days, Odessa will hit the day 7 mark that could trigger greater restrictions, which could mean lowering the percentage of capacity that businesses are allowed to operate at, such as restaurants. Last week, Ector County had more than 800 positives. No one from Ector County was on the Zoom call, and no one has attended regularly in months. The county did issue a press release this week detailing that numbers will not be updated on the website due to staffing. Mayor David Turner has signaled previously that he is ready to cite businesses that allow people to enter without a mask. He said that is not quite ironed out yet, as some people have been out of the office, but something could happen next week. Thursday, he indicated he had spoken with Walmart and HEB and that they seemed to be on board with pulling back some occupancy at Walmart. Turner on the call detailed that the city had come up with commercials to be shared on television and social media, saying it really grabs your attention. MCH CEO Russell Tippin urged Odessans to be safe during the holiday with family and friends. Assume everyone has COVID and protect yourself, he said. MCH will host a second drive-through testing event from 8 a.m. to noon Saturday at the Center for Health and Wellness on Highway 191. Bring a valid ID and proof of residency. Call 557-6557 for questions. This event is just COVID testing and not flu shots. Tippin said he plans to stay at home with food and football for Thanksgiving. Others on the call echoed that sentiment on Thursday, just as the Centers for Disease Control urged Americans to stay at home and stop the spread. Odessa Regional Medical Center's Dr. Rohith Saravanan urged everyone to look at the CDC website for helpful tips on staying safe, including travel tips for those who choose not to stay at home. He said in the last 7 days, 1 million new positives were reported across the country. In our community, it is spreading faster than in others. He urged people to try a Zoom Thanksgiving, as the online meeting service is waiving a paid membership on Thanksgiving Day for Zooms longer than 45 minutes. Benton and Saravanan both addressed the antibody treatment that Texas Governor Greg Abbott says is being shipped to Texas cities. The treatment is not for those in the hospital, but for outpatients who don't require hospitalization, but are at risk of getting sicker. Saravanan also again addressed those saying COVID is not different than flu season. We don't order mobile morgues during regular flu season, he said. ORMC CEO Stacy Brown reported that ORMC has tested 5,993 with 932 positives and 256 pending. She said 28 are in the hospital with 17 in ICU and 11 of those on a ventilator. 7 of those are from out of the area. ORMC has 45 staff members out with a positive test or exposure. MCH reported 91 in hospital patients with 5 persons under investigation and 29 in the CCU. 17 are in the CCU overflow and 25 are on ventilators. There are 17 on 4th floor, 23 on 7th floor, 21 on 9th floor, and 1 in pediatrics. They have tested 11,513 with 232 pending and 8,327 negative. MCH reported 91 in hospital patients. They also reported Thursday 2 more COVID deaths. A 78-year-old man and a 96-year-old man. The deaths are the 112th and 113th deaths at MCH. Both were Odessans and both had pre-existing conditions. The next Zoom call is Tuesday.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read another article from the front page of the Odessa American, Friday, November 20th. COVID-19 concerns hang over Thanksgiving break. By Ruth Campbell. While Ector County Independent School District educators and students are looking forward to a week off for Thanksgiving, Superintendent Scott Murray is worried about that second week of December when everyone has returned from holiday week because of the gestation period of COVID-19. My hope is that all members of our community, whether we are ECISD staff members, students, or not, it is critically important that all members of our community just be really wise and follow the safety procedures that our community has put in place. Mask wearing, social distancing, and keeping hands clean, Murray said in a media call Wednesday. If we simply do those three things as an entire community, then none of us will have cause for concern. But certainly right now, concerns are elevated because of what we are seeing in our community. If we don't do a good job over the holiday break, then certainly we will be impacted in a pretty negative way because of COVID-19, Murray said. He added that because of increasing cases in the community, the district has revisited its protocols, and they are set to take effect November 30th. We'll be announcing those at the end of this week, but we'll look forward to continuing to improving the processes and systems that we are using to keep all of our students safe and all of our staff members safe, Murray said. If there was one, Murray said he would fully support a mask mandate. Our own data indicate that masks have almost eliminated the spread of COVID-19. Our administrators and teachers wear masks and face shields, Murray said. Students in 4th through 12th grade are required to wear masks. He said there are disciplinary measures in place for people that don't comply, but by and large, he said that he has been impressed that students are following the protocols. But I think more importantly, our kids want to make sure that those around them and their teachers remain safe, so I really applaud them. But yes, if there is a situation in which we have a student or a staff member, for that matter, that is not following our safety protocols, that we have responses to that in place, Murray said. On a COVID-connected matter, Murray said as a system, ECISD doesn't think it's wise to administer the STAR or State of Texas Assessments of Academic Readiness test this year. He said results from the test should not be used to make decisions regarding promotion or retention of students, grading or sanctioning schools, or even rewards, because the validity of the data wouldn't be reliable. But the data will be interesting for teachers to see it. It will be interesting for parents to see, because we can use that data element to combine with other data that we're collecting on our students throughout the year. So I support our students taking the STAR, but beyond that, I adamantly oppose any use of that STAR assessment to make decisions about students, to make decisions about schools, to make decisions about districts. Again, validity and reliability is just not going to be present this year, Murray said. State legislators, including Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, have called for the cancellation of STAR this year. Murray said it is a state and federal government decision. In order for the state of Texas to eliminate that assessment for accountability purposes, they must seek permission from the federal government. Right now, the deadline for applying for that decision is the end of December, so it's critical that TEA, the Texas Education Agency, as well as our own legislators and governor, weigh in on this decision, because we have to inform the federal government of our desire to have the accountability portion of that waived this year, and then present a plan for that process. I encourage our commissioner and our governor to pursue that avenue on behalf of every single child in ECISD, as well as the 5.4 million children across the state of Texas. Right now, the ball is in our court as a state to ask permission of the federal government for that opportunity, Murray said. STAR administration starts at the end of April and continues throughout May, he said. He said local legislators can listen to the needs of school districts and make sure state leaders hear districts' desires and act on that. Murray added that there is a great representation in West Texas that really listens to the needs of school districts, and ECISD has already communicated its desires to those lawmakers. Landgraf said he has some confidence that the STAR will be canceled because it has been before. What I and so many of my colleagues are asking is for this school year to be treated the same way the last school year was, specifically the spring semester, when waivers were obtained from the U.S. Department of Education to not require the standardized testing administration in the spring, really because the same COVID-19-related issues persist, Landgraf said in a phone interview Wednesday. We're just asking for the same treatment when it comes to the STAR system. Landgraf said there is support from across the state for this, and many legislators have signed letters to the Texas Commissioner of Education, Mike Morath, backing cancellation of the exam. I would hope the waivers would be in place before the end of this calendar year, Landgraf said. The legislature doesn't meet until January 12th. If STAR were administered, but the results just used for data, Landgraf would be fine with that. Data is fine, he said. I don't think that data should be weaponized in the middle of a pandemic like this. On an unrelated item, Murray said an internet connectivity survey was sent to all ECISD families November 18th. The district wants to know the level of connectivity in families' homes as it tries to provide broadband for every family in the community. We conducted a survey in the spring, and we have all those data, but we know because of COVID-19 and the fact that many of our parents are working from home, as well as students, we know that some of you may have made some decisions as it relates to the level and type of internet connectivity in your home, and we need that information so we, as a school district, can make really smart choices on behalf of your children, Murray said.
Examiner's Office clarifies portable morgue. Investigator explains reason behind purchase to commissioners by Royal McGregor. The Ector County Commissioners spoke briefly about issues related to COVID-19 during its scheduled meeting Thursday morning. A majority of that time was spent by Ector County Medical Examiner Chief Investigator Ron Inge clarifying why the medical examiner's office purchased a portable morgue. Inge spoke for nearly 10 minutes, and he detailed the portable morgue wasn't purchased specifically for COVID-19 related deaths, but that most of its use will be for decomposing bodies and burned victims. Even though we have this COVID situation going on, this is a serious issue and we are having COVID-related deaths in Ector County, but that wasn't my guiding reason for ordering this unit, he said during the meeting. Inge told the county commissioners that if Medical Center Hospital, which is the only morgue in Odessa, doesn't have space and that they have to ask funeral homes to house bodies. Inge said Medical Center Hospital has the only morgue that is available for the medical examiner's office to use. There are spaces for 6 people. One space has to be left open for MCH. Inge also detailed Odessa Regional Medical Center doesn't have a morgue. We had a situation last week that we had a decomposing body that we had to send for an autopsy. We didn't have any place to put it. I called Tarrant County and made arrangements with them that we had to place the body in a double body bag and transport it from Odessa to Tarrant County without it being refrigerated. He said the process to bring a portable morgue came in 2018 when he said the medical examiner's office had 691 natural occurring deaths. Those natural occurring deaths rose to 752 in 2019. Inge said as of Thursday's commissioner's meeting, the medical examiner's office has 526 natural occurring deaths, and he estimates the yearly natural occurring deaths will be similar to 2018. During the meeting, the commissioners also unanimously approved setting December 15th for runoff elections among City of Odessa mayoral candidates Dewey Bryant and Javier Hoven and City Council hopefuls Mark Mata and Michael Shelton in District 1 and David Turner and Denise Swanner for the panel's at-large seat. Other action. Approved acceptance of a check for cost savings sharing from Vector Fleet Management. Approved purchases made by the Public Works Department from Terracon Consultants. Approved action regarding sole source list. Approved the payment of criminal background checks for staff from Fund 015, County Clerk Records Management and Preservation Fund. Approved action regarding a 1-year extension for vending machine services. Approved action regarding the bid specifications for Ector County janitorial supplies. Approved a resolution in support of Ector County's application for a formula grant through the Texas Indigent Defense Commission. Approved Human Resources Director Donna James' recommendation on naming a privacy officer to comply with the Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. Approved Accounts Payable Fund Requirements Report for November 19th, 2020. COVID-19 News by the Numbers. Editor's Note. Ector County will not be able to update the COVID-19 dashboard this week due to limited data entry staff. ECISD daily cases, 12 students, 9 staff. Midland County, 6,726 confirmed, 125 deaths. Texas, 1,060,883 confirmed, with 9,656,497 tested. Total Texas deaths, 20,113. U.S. cases, 11,465,722 total confirmed and 249,670 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/T TZTRJLF. Quick hits. Share the love campaign. The American Red Cross serving the Permian Basin and Subaru of Midland scheduled a kickoff event for Subaru's Share the Love campaign that was held today at Subaru of Midland in Odessa. Visit redcross.org or cruise ROJAAmericana.org. Holly Jolly Market. The second annual Holly Jolly Market has been scheduled from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main in Midland. There will be prizes, vendors, and holiday music. Admission is $5. Visit bushconventioncenter.com. Tejana Super Show. The 49th Tejana Super Show has been scheduled for Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Doors open to the public noon to 5 p.m. Registration may be made online. To register or for more information, call 337-2189, text 653-3710, email tejano@sbcglobal.net, or visit TejanoSupershow.com. Hands-on Learning the Rule in Nimitz Teacher's Class by Ruth Campbell. As one of the early adopters of the Foldscope portable paper microscope, Dr. Azul Serrano Purcell has infused her seventh grade science classes at Nimitz Middle School with the wonder of discovery. This is Purcell's second year at Nimitz, and she strives to make her lessons hands-on. She has made the Foldscope part of her students' everyday supplies. On a recent Wednesday, the youngsters were examining dried leaves under the Foldscope, but they have looked at roaches, frogs, chicken feet, and other items. The seventh grade students say they like the Foldscope because it's something they can keep and they're easy to use. At first, students were skeptical that the paper microscopes would work, but they were pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed looking at the ants and the flowers and stuff, 12-year-old Presley Christopher said. That's what I've mostly been looking at. I looked at the moth and stuff, but the ants are really cool because I didn't think they would be like that. They're a different color than you actually assume they are. Keegan Connor said the Foldscopes are fun and more affordable than microscopes. Connor has liked looking at the leaves as well because he can see all the veins and other features. He sees the Foldscope as an enhancement to science, which he already enjoys. Devin Martin, 13, said the Foldscope teaches them more about what they thought they knew. We thought we knew that a leaf was that and that alone. Whenever you use a Foldscope, you get to learn more about what you thought you knew. I've pretty much enjoyed science my whole life. The excitement of doing labs and hands-on activities, this has made this more enjoyable, Martin said. Like some of the other students, Martin didn't think the Foldscope was going to work before he tried it. I thought you might be able to see a little bit closer, but it would just be a blurry image. But then when I started looking at it and observing it, it got really clear and defined what I was looking at, Martin said. 13-year-old Angela Hicks said Foldscope really does help with learning because they can use it at home, too. The dry leaf has been her favorite thing to look at under the Foldscope because it's the most clear one I've gotten so far. There were these black dots all over it. I didn't know what it was, Hicks said. That really did intrigue me, so I'm trying to adjust the adjustment to see if I can get a more clearer up-close picture. ECISD is in partnership with the Foldscope team, Stanford University, and researchers in the Foldscope project, a news release said. Purcell said the good thing about Foldscope is they don't have to share it, and they have to be cautious about sharing materials. They can use it all throughout the year, Purcell said. Now we're getting used to how to work it, but eventually we will be doing experiments. Like we'll have water and put it outside and leave it outside. And then we're going to have water from bottles and see if we have any germs growing. We can look at them through that. They will soon be looking at DNA. We're here to learn and to do things. They're very curious. I love that. It's not easy to build a fold scope, but they just kept trying and trying until they get the right images. Once they do that, once they get to the image they can see so clearly, it's just worth all the time. So we're enjoying this, Purcell said. She said it's up to teachers to request fold scopes. I have kids who are remote, so what I did on a Saturday is I came with a box and I was outside and they just came by and they would get the little fold scope. It comes ready to use. It's made of paper and it's super sturdy, Purcell said. Even if it gets wet, it won't hurt. It's kind of like a puzzle. They had to build it. They're little engineers. Some of them had difficulties. They had to stop and they get stuck or they build their own way. And I'm like, that's part of learning. Having difficulties, having obstacles. That's part of learning, she added. For a recent unit on body systems, Purcell had her students dissect chicken legs and investigate tendons, muscles, bones, and bone marrow. The students were able to view the chicken bone marrow using their fold scopes. They also dissected frogs and studied the nervous system using technology to stimulate and measure neuron signals. I like making connections with them, Purcell said of the students. I think hands-on, when they can see and do, they learn so much more than me giving them a book to read or a video to watch. Originally from Argentina, Purcell moved to the United States and intended to get a medical license, but then had a family of her own with three children. Her children are 4, 9, and 12, so she wants to wait until her youngest is older before pursuing medicine again. Meanwhile, teaching gives her freedom, even if it is a lot of work. I love challenges. I love kids. That's why I wanted to do pediatrics. And I love science. I want to be the teacher that I want for my kids. So I try to have fun, Purcell said. 4-year-old girl sexually assaulted. A 42-year-old man and a 31-year-old woman were arrested after they reportedly sexually assaulted a 4-year-old family member. John Christopher Digby, 42, and Shelby Lynette Elder, 31, were charged with aggravated sexual assault of a child, family violence, a first-degree felony. On November 15th, a 4-year-old girl was caught by family members touching herself inappropriately on several occasions, an OPD affidavit detailed. When asked why she was doing that, the child stated to family members that she was told that it was healthy for her to do that. The girl also reportedly detailed that family members would inappropriately touch her. She also stated they would take pictures of her actions with their phones. The 4-year-old identified Digby and Elder as the actors, the affidavit stated. During an interview, the girl reportedly detailed that photos were taken of her and she was told to undress and pose in various poses. The girl also stated she was asked to inappropriately touch herself. The girl detailed that incidents happened during the nighttime, the affidavit stated. The 4-year-old also reportedly used her grandmother's iPad to search for people on YouTube who were also itching themselves. Family members confirmed that the girl was caught watching pornographic videos on an iPad. Digby was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center November 16th, while Elder was booked November 18th, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $50,000 and posted bail November 16th. Elder had one bond totaling $60,000, and she posted bail November 18th. Death notices for Friday, November 20th. Tommy Jacob McCandless. Tommy Jacob McCandless, 32, of Midland, died Tuesday, November 17th. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. November 21st at Living Way Four Square Church in Midland. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery with John Y. Moore officiate.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.